Today's episode is episode number 50, and it's the first episode in English. It's a replay of a panel discussion I have moderated at the Festival of Finance on the topic of central bank digital currencies and the digital euro, and I had great guests from Allianz, Deutsche Bank, and from the European Central Bank. Hello and welcome to our panel on central bank digital currencies at the Festival of Finance. My name is Alexander Bechtel. I'm responsible for digital currencies and blockchain at the Corporate Bank of Deutsche Bank. And I'm delighted that we are able to have this panel today, first on a very timely topic, central bank digital currencies, and then secondly with an exciting and interesting round of panelists. And since we only have 30 minutes for our discussion today, I won't waste any time and jump right in by presenting our amazing panelists. So first we have Robert Crozier. Bob is leading the strategy department and scaled operationalization of blockchain and DLT at Allianz Group. In addition, Bob is chief architect of customer platforms, and he has a background in financial modeling and actuarial engineering. He brings with him over 20 years of expertise in the global insurance industry. Second, we have Marion Labour. Marion is covering payments, digital currencies, and fintech at Deutsche Bank Research. She also lectures in finance and economics at Harvard University. And previously, Marion has worked as an economist at the Luxembourg Central Bank, the European Commission, and she was also a fellow researcher at the IMF. And last but by no means least, we have Ignacio Terol. Ignacio has been working at the ECB for 20 years in the area of central bank money and payments. And currently he is leading the innovation team. And in this role, Ignacio has played a very crucial role in compiling the first ECB report on the digital euro that has been published last Friday. And this report will definitely be a topic of today's panel. And I would also like to start by borrowing from this ECB report to briefly introduce today's topic. So what is a central bank digital currency? And the ECB report states, and I quote, "The digital euro is a liability of the euro system recorded in digital form as a complement to cash and central bank deposits," end quote. So in other words, a CBDC is a new form of central bank money, which exists next to the two already existing forms of central bank money, namely cash and central bank reserves. And a CBDC kind of tries to combine the advantages of cash and central bank reserves. So on the one hand, we have reserves, which are digital already, but only available to banks. And on the other hand, we have cash, which is available to everyone, but only in a physical form. And the CBDC would be both, right? It would be digital and available to everyone. So it kind of combines the best of two worlds. However, we will also see during our discussion today that CBDCs do not only have advantages, but also disadvantages. But before we go into detail here, I would like to pose the first question to Marion. Marion, could you maybe briefly give us an overview of CBDC projects around the world? So who is working on CBDC, and is it really a relevant topic, or is it only me living in a bubble since I'm dealing with these topics day in, day out?
Thank you very much, Alexander, and welcome to everyone. So first, let me say that digital currency, it's not new. And the concept has started around 30 years ago when DigiCash created the first worldwide virtual currency. Bitcoin, of course, was the most famous cryptocurrency. It was invented in 2008, but cryptocurrency have passed the tipping point needed to become fashionable when in June last year, Facebook has announced its Libra cryptocurrency. So, when you have digital currency, we have cryptocurrency, which are like private digital currency, and central bank digital currency, which are another form of digital currency. And over the past 2 years, worldwide central banks and government have multiplied and sped up their digital cash initiative. And in the survey published earlier this year in January, the Bank of International Settlement mentioned that 80% of central banks are currently developing a CBDC. And this work goes far beyond research, since we have 10% of central banks mostly in emerging economies, which are already running pilot projects. And looking ahead, central banks representing about a fifth of the world population are likely to issue a general purpose CBDC. And there is a wide range of motivation. Some central banks are issuing a CBDC for financial stability reasons, monetary policy implementation, some of them for financial inclusion. For example, this is the case of the Chinese central bank. Others for payment efficiency, both domestic and cross-border, probably like the ECB, and also payment security. So many people, many policymakers, many central banks are currently working on CBDC.
Ignacio, the ECB has published its first report on CBDC last week. Can you maybe give us a brief summary of where the ECB stands, maybe also in comparison to other existing projects around the world?
Yes, thank you, Alexander. So we explain in our report why a digital euro may be necessary, why, and I'll come later to this if you wish, why the euro system needs to be prepared to issue it, while at the same time we want to keep all our options open. We describe what a digital euro would be, and you describe it very well earlier, Alexander. In layman's term, I would say a digital form of the banknote. And when it comes to how, we describe the design options that we are considering, as well as how they may interrelate to one another. But we're not yet in a position to answer the question, what would a digital euro look like exactly? Why don't we answer yet this question? First, because we will, with this report, we are initiating discussions with what we call, and it's a very broad term on purpose, supervised service provider. It's a broad term to keep it open, but at the same time to say it's not just anybody. So we will initiate discussions with supervised service providers to see how they could help us distribute the digital euro on the front end. And there are two messages here. One, that we believe that the private sector will remain more innovative on the front end. And as central banks, we don't have any ambition to take over the front end, so to say. The other reason why we do not answer the question, what would a digital euro look like, is because we want a true user-centric product. So we will gather how far the various possibilities that we may consider are able to satisfy the needs of prospective users. And when we think of prospective users, it makes me think also of the public consultation we will very soon be launching. It's not yet there. It comes next Monday, the 12th of October. So we're now entering a period of active listening where we will aim to hear from European citizens, merchants, businesses, financial intermediaries, academics, in order to see how to go ahead.
Okay, so I understand that this report last Friday was only a first step, and now the discussions begin, right? And you were mentioning you want to build a user-centric product, and this basically leads me to our last panelists who would be a user of the digital euro. So Bob, it's great to have someone from the industry here. Can you maybe give us an overview of how Allianz approaches the topic digital currencies, or in particular CBDC? Is this something that's relevant to you? Are you looking at this?
Yes, thanks for having me. Allianz is looking at CBDCs or digital currencies really as the last mile in our DLT and blockchain strategy. I feel like it's we focus our attentions immediately on contract administration and reconciliation problems and the like, and we see then the digital cash element, the CBDC, as the last mile to help us smooth and ease friction on money transfer between either internal OEs and transfer across borders, for example, in Europe, or with our customers where heavy cash transactions at the moment would maybe lead to some compliance risk, for example, if we have an idea where the money comes from, a better idea and a more traceable idea where the money, that de-risks the entire system for us. So it's a very much the end game really, on moving money around our system, both internally and externally. So we keep a close eye on it. And I think we're focused on the CBDCs as the gold standard. I think we've eschewed really looking at cryptocurrencies, which are out in the wild, if you like, and sticking very closely to our to regulated currencies, for example, and making use of those in the short term, in the medium term to long term, I should say.
Okay, I would actually like to go a bit deeper into these use cases. So Marion, you have already mentioned some in your first statement. You were mentioning that some countries are exploring CBDC with relation to financial stability, monetary policy. Can you maybe give us a bit of a deeper insight, maybe also talk about projects like China or Sweden? What are these projects that are most advanced? What kind of use cases do they have in mind for their CBDC?
The probably most advanced project that we have now, and that started actually earlier this year, is, as you mentioned, Sweden and China. Sweden, it's probably a story centered on a cashless society. So research on digital currency there started in 2017, so pretty recently actually, as cash in circulation has been declining since 2007, and now cash only represents only 1% of GDP in Sweden, one of the lowest level in the world. And Sweden has been developing alternatives to cash since 2012. So first it started with a new mobile payment system called Switch. And more recently, earlier this year, in January, Sweden revealed that it had started its first trial of the digital krona project. And the government is planning to implement a digital currency through the whole country in 2021 if it works well. So this is for Sweden. And then the overall case study that we have, which started slightly later, it's China. And it's probably a story around the RMB internationalization here. And the research on the digital currency in China started very early, as early as 2014, on a project that it's called DCEP, DC like digital currency and EP like electronic payment. And the main purpose of the Chinese digital currency is to replace paper money, but also to improve financial inclusion, which is another step, obviously, in the development of China's digital economy. So we were expecting the pilot from China to start actually later in 2020, but probably with the US-China trade war and Facebook announcement, it has sped up Chinese plan to launch its CBDC, and it started in April. So in April, China began testing the ERMB for payment in few major cities, and the government is expected to expand pilot program at the venue for the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics again. And what we think is that since there are more than 600 million users, Chinese users, using on a daily basis WeChat and Alipay, this is very likely to see rapid and widespread acceptance. And obviously, since in China, I mean, it's one of the biggest countries in the world, with more than 1.4 billion inhabitants, China has definitely the potential to advance digital currency into the mainstream. And probably one last point on regulatory perspective. The emergence of the ERMB also means that every financial transactions would be visible to and traceable by government authorities.
Okay, I have a follow-up question for Bob related to this. Bob, maybe two questions even. So the first one would be, can you maybe elaborate a little bit on the need Allianz has for a digital euro? So what kind of things could you do with a digital euro which cannot be done today? And then as a follow-up question, would you also maybe end up using, because Marion has just mentioned it, a Chinese digital currency, for instance, for your business?
I think on the use case, just answer the second question first. If that is the direction of travel in China, and of course we have exposure and operations in China and Allianz Assistance and Allianz Partners and so on, if that is a payment mechanism in China, then of course we need to pay attention to that as a payment service provider and how we would do that. So I think just merely on the essential format of doing business with customers, if they're paying with e-cash and digital currency, then we of course that I think that's a given. As for other use cases that we could foresee, you can imagine in a scenario where we have a claim from a customer and we validate that claim and we're using other blockchain initiatives to settle that really quickly. You could see a future where we would deliver, let's say, a programmable claim payout to say, here we want you to, if you're going to rebuild your factory or if you're going to rebuild a shop, for example, we want you to use these accredited and approved approved trades, trade associations or construction companies and so on to ensure high quality is built in. So really building in the sense that I'm agreeing with Marian that the digital currency gives the central bank a high degree of control of where the money goes and what transactions it's used for. So I think that degree of control then allows us to program payouts, for example, in a future state where you could say, we reinsure you, but only if you use these quality assured builders and so on and so on. So that programmable element combined with the degree of control from the central bank means that we would be paying money to KYC individuals. It helps, I think, the regulator and the supervisory bodies of countries to ensure that money flowing around the system is flowing to people who are legitimate. I think it can reduce the amount of shadow economy, black market economy, where cash currency goes, because I think, as I referred to, as a use case around some markets, there's broker markets, they take cash from their customers, and then in certain industries, we take the money from a broker. But if we know where the cash comes from, we can reduce compliance risk. So in a future where we have digital identity connected to digital wallets, so where you can trace up the pyramid to the central bank, and then likewise down from the central bank to KYC and AML, anti-money laundering individuals, then I think that de-risks the entire system for both us as customers and our financial exposure and our compliance exposure to risks, as well as that for the supervisory bodies controlling the financial services industries and transactions in real time, that they can see anti-patterns, risks emerging in real time. So really combines with this real-time auditing, real-time supervision, real-time control, and also then and all for the end customer, to give them a quicker payout, quicker access to funds, and ability to control any losses that happen. So I think there's a real future there when you combine digital cash with the other real-time structures that we're building that will give us a real way to serve customers better and secure their futures even better.
Yeah. So Ignacio, Bob has just mentioned this programmability of the euro, right? And my understanding of your report is that the ECB has probably other use cases in mind than a programmable euro. So I read more things like digital cash, maybe a tool for monetary policy. So what are the exact use cases you have in mind? Or maybe I may put it a bit more bluntly, is the ECB actually thinking about the use cases for the end user, or are you more considering your mandate when you're discussing design considerations of the digital euro?
Thank you, Alexander. So thinking about the use cases for the end user, if I take an end user perspective, I would say we want to offer all those cases where an end user can use banknotes today already, but instead in a digital form, plus those cases in which payer and payee cannot use banknotes because they are not in direct physical contact, so e-commerce typically. With one exception, which is a rare but possible use case of banknotes, is to hide them under the mattress. So it is not our intention to facilitate this use case of this unfrequent use case of banknotes with our design. So referring to what Marion was mentioning earlier as a list of objectives, I would say the primary aim of a digital euro is to be an attractive means of payment for retail use, with also monetary sovereignty considerations, with financial inclusion considerations, and with resilience considerations, if you think of COVID-19. While we would not want that the digital euro becomes a significant means of investment. On your question on programmable money, it is, you will find a reference in the report opening this possibility. So it's not by any means anything that we have discarded at this stage. We want to, precisely because we want to have this combination of an efficient means of exchange without requiring a very high stock of value, programmable money can help very much in this respect. And finally, a key message that we give in the report also is that we intend to complement and not substitute cash. I asked my mom this weekend what she read in the ECB website, and the key message she read is that banknotes will not disappear, and so that's a good reading for a senior citizen.
So Ignacio, let me play a little bit the devil's advocate here. I understand that the ECB wants to create something that's very similar to physical cash, but in a digital world, right? But then when I look at the design dimensions you are discussing currently, I do not really see that what you're planning to design is really digital cash. Because wouldn't you, if you want to have digital cash, don't you need for sure a token, right? It has to be a token since it needs to be a bearer asset. There should be no interest rate because cash has a 0% interest rate. And probably you also need some kind of anonymity. And in your report, you're mentioning that it might not be possible to create something that is anonymous. So can you maybe comment on that again? Is it really cash, digital cash that you are creating there?
Mm-hmm. So we're considering all the options at this stage. So we are considering the possibility of central bank money as tokens in a decentralized layer, as to be in particular used offline, as well as the possibility to central bank money accounts to be used in particular online. One important point is to signal that we do give a lot of importance to privacy. After all, we are the institution providing banknotes, and the fact that citizens have privacy in how they pay is an important element of how a society is configured and the European values that we want to bring in it. So if anyone reads The Handmaid's Tale from Margaret Atwood, you can see the risks of a digital world with no privacy at all. So as a public institution, we do believe that there is a need to maintain the position. But this privacy indeed is one of the elements that we have to bring into the design and balance it with the need to, in any case, respect regulation, anti-money laundering, CFT. So these are the aspects of possible trade-offs which we signal in the report. We're not taking a strong position in a design, but showing the need to balance all these trade-offs.
So since this is a payment and banking conference, we need to address the question how a CBDC might affect the banking sector. So maybe Marking on this question goes to you. Which role will banks play after a CBDC has been introduced? So what are potential threats or challenges that might arise for the banking sector?
Good and timely questions. So quick answer is it depends, and it depends mainly probably on two different things. First, it's the setup that we call the architecture, and the second one, the level of interest rate. So first, in terms of design decision, it will definitely shape currency platform architectures. And the question is whether consumers will have a direct claim on the central bank and or an indirect claim via payment intermediaries. And most of central banks are actually considering a few different options. First one, it's what we call a direct CBDC, So it's a permanent system operated by the central bank and which offers the retail services. Second one, it's what we call hybrid or intermediated CBDC, it's kind of similar. And in this case, an intermediate solution, it's going to run on two different engines. And intermediaries are going to handle retail payment, but the CBDC still remains a direct claim on the central bank. And the third one, it's what we are calling indirect or synthetic CBDC. So it's a payment system which is operated by intermediaries that resemble narrow payment banks. And as it is now, this is very likely to have commercial banks still involved in the setup. Second factors that's going to matter a lot as well, and probably mostly in advanced economies, it's the level of interest rate. Level of interest rate is currently very low in advanced economies, slightly higher in emerging economies. And if we have an e-currency which is not remunerated, like cash, so with an interest rate equal to zero, it means that people may prefer to deposit their money in a commercial bank where the deposit account is remunerated. However, and the main issue that we have, it's like since most of advanced economies have a low, if not negative interest rate, people may not have any incentive to move their money in a commercial bank. And obviously, if it's the case, this could disrupt legal bank franchise that we have. And a few examples is like credit card volumes, interchange fees, or payment transaction fees and deposit interest margins. And this could be seriously affected. And as Bob and Ignacio mentioned, if people have a bank account directly at the central bank, it also means that it's going to create additional responsibilities for central banks to handle, such that KYC issues and anti-money laundering, financing of terrorism, tax compliance, and so on.
Okay, maybe a quick question to Ignacio before I then move to have a last question for Bob. Could you maybe comment quickly on the answer of Marion? Does the ECB plan to take over the deposits and payments industry from banks, or is it more like a public-private partnership you have in mind?
So in short, it's a public-private partnership, but I think it's important to be clear that from the models that Marion has mentioned, what we're envisaging is a direct claim on the central bank. If you stretch some of the others' definitions of CBDC, you end up not knowing what's the difference between a CBDC and a stablecoin, and that can be dangerous. So it's a direct claim on the central bank, but distributed through the private sector, as I mentioned at the beginning, and with protections in the design in terms of limits on individual holdings or tier remuneration. We will have to see how we design it to avoid an impact on the balance sheet of the commercial banks, because we don't want to see our central bank balance sheet balloon anymore in any case.
Okay, time is running, unfortunately, but Bob, I'm really interested in your opinion on the following question. The ECB has not decided yet whether a CBDC or the digital euro should run on a DLT or a blockchain or not. So what's your take on that, and what would be maybe the advantages of having this digital euro running on a blockchain?
I just have this image in my head of my bed having a digital wallet charging me for every night's sleep and get money under the mattress. In terms of the technology, we take a very pragmatic approach, and we look at things in the round. DLT has a number of features that are desirable, such as, you know, audit trail, immutability, programmable smart contracts, and so on. But of course, it's not the only technology in the world that could do this. But I am firmly of the belief that it's probably the best technology to use. So we could do it in other ways. There are, just given the nature of, we can prove that a token has been KYC'd and AML, but not reveal the nature or the owner of that coin or that digital euro, for example. So the concepts of zero knowledge proofs and so on attached to tokens could alleviate the privacy concerns of individuals in Europe, of course. But of course, the digital cash is a traceable thing, but it doesn't have to be traceable back to the person who actually owns it. And we know that it's a safe and secure coin. So there are technologies out there that would do the job. I just think DLT might just do it a lot better and give us a lot more features and functionality that we wouldn't otherwise have.
Okay, great. So I'm afraid we have to come to an end already. So usually I sit on the other side as a guest, like in these panel discussions, and I always hate it when I'm asked to make predictions at the end. But since I'm a moderator now, I will truly enjoy asking you about a prediction. So let's make this really brief, because we already had some questions concerning, when will a central bank digital currency arrive? So maybe just in one sentence from each of you, let's maybe start with Bob right away. Do you think we will have a central bank a digital currency in the future? And if yes, how many years will it take until we have it?
Yes, I do believe we will have. I think the private sector will force the central banks to do so. And I think we would be ready for using it in large scale in 3 to 5 years, I suspect.
Great. Marion, what do you think?
I fully share what Bob just mentioned. COVID-19 has definitely sped up research and pilot project, and I wouldn't be surprised if we are seeing CBDC in advanced economies in 3-5 years.
Ignacio, does this sound reasonable to you, 3 to 5 years?
I would say, allow me to take the institutional response. We will prepare and we will keep all our options open. I cannot say more than that.
Okay, fair enough. So I have nothing to add to these predictions. Thank you first to the panelists for contributing to this interesting discussion. Thank you also to the audience for watching and for asking questions. CBDC and digital currencies will for sure not disappear anymore. So this topic will accompany us for many more years. It will likely disrupt banking and payments. This might be frightening at first, but I believe it also creates exciting and new opportunities for new players, but also for existing players. So I'm really looking forward to having more of these discussions in the future. And until then, I would say stay tuned and enjoy the rest of the program at the Festival of Finance. So thank you again and bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.